I'm Marissa Norcross.
And I'm Dave Freund, and this is The Next Page. So, Marissa, our third podcast, another beautiful sunny day. I can't believe it. I was just outside. It's 75 degrees and sunny.
Why are we always the ones inside recording on the one beautiful day a week?
Exactly. It seems like we have multiple days of rain, one day of sunshine, and we're here. But we're here because we believe there's value in this. And as we've seen from comments that have come in, even was told by our producer / engineer that we had a download of our podcast from Japan. So that's pretty amazing. In just a couple weeks, we get somebody from Japan.
That's awesome.
So Marissa, let's before we jump into the email and things like that. So I understand you're in a book club.
I've been in a book club for 11 months now, and it's been a lot of fun. It's a group of moms, so we have a lot in common. We're all strangers to each other. When we met last August, we met in a mom's Facebook group of all places, that, you know, we all kind of live in the same area. But it's been really fun and a great way to get out during the week and, you know, enjoy some fun, little break from work too.
So when you're in this book club, do you all read the same book or do you read your own books and then talk about it?
We all read the same book. So we are currently reading The Handmaid's Tale because of the popularity now. There's a Hulu original series based on the book. So we thought we'd read it. I read it back in college, but it's funny when you're actually reading to, you know, knowing that you have to write a paper at the end versus reading for fun and knowing that you're going to chat about it with girlfriends. Totally different experience.
So how do you decide what book?
Oh, you know, it's different every time. Usually everyone contributes some ideas. We love utilizing the public library, so we look to see what's has a lot of available copies, and sometimes we place requests for months out so that we can make sure everyone gets a chance to get the book from the library if they want to. But usually just suggestions from members of the club.
So I have a question for you. Are you a hard copy book reader or are you an e-reader?
You know, I've done both. I currently just love having the physical book in my hands. I am a little bit of a germaphobe, so during flu season at the library, I will only do ebooks or audiobooks. I really enjoy the audiobooks for, you know, my commute, but I do buy some books on Amazon and enjoy having them, and I've been passing them on to my grandma, which is really fun because we can have our own little chit-chat about the books since she's reading my book club books the month after me.
That's great. You know, it's surprising that you're not really surprising, but it's interesting that you talked about being a germaphobe, because I kept thinking when you talk about the hardcover books or, you know, the physical books, because that's the way I love to read as well, that I know a person that whenever they get a book, the first thing they have to do is take a hand sanitizer and wipe down the book, because these people have been handling them. They've been laying around people's homes. And I think that that's a real issue. That now maybe those that understand germs will say, oh no, for crying out loud, there's no germs left on that book. But at least for peace of mind, I think there's germs. How's that?
If there's a listener who feels the same way about germs as I do and library books, write us a note, because I have this grand idea for an invention that sanitizes the library books when you put them in the little drop box.
Wow, that sounds, and you know, so if they agree with you, yes, get us some information about that, or tell us, share with us that you feel that way. And then perhaps we may even have some companies, member companies, that would like to take your idea and turn it into a realized product.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
So good. That's exciting.
Yeah. What about you? Are you reading anything right now?
I am. So right now I'm actually reading, I just started it this past weekend. I'm reading Stephen Covey's The Speed of Trust, which I've heard about a lot, I've never read. I think it's really drawing me in. It's exciting. It's got some pretty interesting basic truths about human beings and how we interact, and I'm sure there's going to be several emails that are coming out of that one.
So do you only read leadership and professional development books?
I used to. So when I put myself on my growth plan of reading one book a month, it was all about leadership books. And of course, I started with a bunch of books that John Maxwell wrote, because if I'm going to train it, I need to know that stuff inside out and backwards. And then I started looking at other leadership books. And then, believe it or not, it was my son, Tim, that told me, "Dad, you need to read things other than just leadership books." And then also Michael Hyatt, who the former publisher that I've mentioned before of Thomas Nelson Publishing, he suggests that people vary the books that they read. This might sound like it's all leadership stuff, but it really isn't. The book that I took this week's email from, and that also next week's email is going to be from, was the book by Doris Kearns Goodwin, A Team of Rivals, which was how Abraham Lincoln built his cabinet. But I've also read other historical type books. Some are historical fiction. I really like those. I really enjoyed The Killing Lincoln, The Killing Kennedy, those kind of books.
That's awesome. We definitely have different taste in books.
Yes, we do.
But that's what makes us such a great team here. So let's jump in with a few of our things for today. So not only are we going to talk about a famous historical leader that may or may not have already been mentioned so far in this podcast, but we are also going to address a question that came in from one of our listeners. And again, I want to encourage anyone who's listening who has feedback or questions for us to, you know, visit the show notes for our email addresses and send those right to us, because it's a really great way for us to engage with you here. But anyway, so last week we received a question from one of our listeners who is struggling with lack of advancement professionally and financially. He doesn't find his job very challenging anymore, and in turn, he's hoping to find something with more challenge and thus higher compensation. To further complicate the situation, his supervisor cannot really do anything more to advance him. He's already done everything that he can. And there aren't many opportunities that match what he's looking for in this geographic area. He's not really looking to move. The hardest part about this is that he really does enjoy the company he currently works for. So, Dave, how can our listener map out a path that will get him where he wants to be?
When the question came in, I just felt for this person. This is actually, once again, a very typical scenario that I found in companies. In before joining MACME full time, even when I was still running a member company, I would do training. So I've actually trained for MACME for over 20 years. And many times, individuals in the classes would come up at the end and say, "Can I talk to you? I've got this problem." And it's a very similar scenario. And I think the good news for this individual is that they like where they work. I think the other thing that's very positive is that when they expressed some needs to their boss, the boss did address as much as they could. So that tells me that we've got an organization where a person is valued and that the person values the company. So that, and sometimes if you think about it, you know, how many people are out there working for companies that might not even care about them as an individual, or a job that a company that they'd rather leave if they could? So this individual has two things going for them right away. They're valued and they value the company. So then we get to the next part about, so they're bored in their job perhaps, or they wish that they could do more. This is where that individual needs to take ownership of their own professional development. So the company's taken them as far as they can. Well, what about the employee? How far could they take themselves in terms of expanding their knowledge? Are there things that they're interested in, passions that they have, that they could develop a skill that could be used by the company? Maybe the job that they're looking for doesn't exist yet. Maybe there is a job within that company that's waiting. It's waiting to be created. Once the realization is there that there's a person that can do it. So you need to take ownership of your own professional development. The other thing is that maybe the skills that this individual needs to hone or to grow into could be used by a charity. Last week I spoke about the Young Leaders group from the United Way. You know, are there organizations where this person could really develop a skill set that maybe they don't have right now that would make them much more marketable to their own company first, because I never advocate people, you know, leaving our member companies. They really need to try to salvage that situation or make it the best. But they could be practicing somewhere else other than where they're working now, as in a situation of like a charity.
Mm-hmm. I think that it really comes down to if, you know, he wants to stay. I think from what I understand, it's just all about adding more value to the company so that the company can find more value in him. And like you said, maybe create a position and, you know, increase his pay so that everyone's happy at that point.
And I love how you said that, Marissa. You said he can add more value to the company. As he increases his value, his stock value rises. It rises because he is doing more for the company where he is. And then in turn, they're going to see that and hopefully see that. I'm sure they will. Because if he likes working there, there's a reason for that. And then as he increases the amount of value he's adding, it increases his stock value. And I really believe that they're going to find something for him to do, an opportunity. And like I tell people, you know, so maybe your company doesn't. But if you're doing the right things, other people are going to notice.
Yep, and that kind of segues perfectly into what today's episode is really all about, which is, you know, building the right team and surrounding yourself with people that add value and support your mission and will lead the whole team to success. So you mentioned Abraham Lincoln's story a little bit in your post this week. So why don't you tell us a little bit more about what you were thinking behind that and also about Abraham Lincoln's strategy?
So the email this week... I had just finished reading A Team of Rivals, a book that I really highly recommend. It's a big book. It's a long book. It's 700 pages. If you're going to listen to it on Audible, it takes 40 hours, but it's extremely, it's A Team of Rivals by Doris Kearns Goodwin, an excellent book. I really highly recommend it. So as I was reading that book and listening to that book, what struck me was the amazing leadership characteristics about Abraham Lincoln. And just to summarize the email for those that may not have read it, I start out the email back basically at the end of Lincoln's life. And I start it with his Secretary of War standing next to his bedside as he succumbs to the gunshot wound after laying there for about 9 hours, pretty much just dying. And this man, Edwin Stanton, who was a man that didn't show a lot of emotion. He was, you know, he was the Secretary of War, and he had to deal with the worst war in terms of loss of human life. The Civil War, more people died in the Civil War than all of our other wars combined as a nation. So that's what Secretary Stanton had to deal with. So he didn't show a lot of emotion, but he just wept when Lincoln passed away. And it was even said that if just the mention of Lincoln's name for weeks after, he would just begin to weep again. But the irony in it is that Stanton and Lincoln were rivals. They clearly were rivals. That Lincoln first met Stanton in 1855. Both men, as attorneys, were asked to represent a gentleman by the name of John Manny. He was being charged with a patent infringement by the McCormick Reaper Company. Both men end up in Cincinnati to represent Mr. Manny. And when Stanton sees Lincoln, because he doesn't look the part, you know, he was a self-trained lawyer, so to speak, studied on his own to pass the bar, and he just dismisses him. He just ignores him. He snubs him. He shuns him. But Lincoln still ends up appointing him Secretary of War later on. And so that really is the gist of this email. You know, and there were two others. There was Salmon P. Chase, who was the former governor and senator from the state of Ohio, and Edward Bates, who was from Missouri. All three of those men end up being cabinet members in Lincoln's cabinet, which to me was just a fascinating thing, that these people who were rivals of Lincoln's, who Lincoln beat for the 1860 Republican nomination, Lincoln names to his cabinet.
So let's rewind for a minute. How did he end up beating those people?
that was an interesting story that I never knew. So the actual premier choice, or the person that the pollsters would have said, because I actually forgot to mention one, was Seward, who was from Auburn. Seward also was actually the one that was supposed to be the nominee. So there were three gentlemen: William Seward, Salmon P. Chase, and Edward Bates were the three favorites. Seward being probably the number one favorite to win the nomination. Then coming Chase, and then probably a distant third was Bates. Lincoln wasn't even in the picture. But what Lincoln's campaign operatives did was went to the various camps, the Seward camp, the Chase camp, and the Bates camp, and said, "We understand that your number one choice is, let's see, William Seward. But you should consider Lincoln as your second choice." So literally, Lincoln had and his men had convinced everyone that Lincoln should be their second choice. The problem that the others faced was that they couldn't get a majority of ballots for that from the Republican convention in 1860. So then they finally, after trying for days to get a nominee, decide. Then the thing was spun. Okay, let's see who would be our second choice. Let's name them as our nominee. And that's how Lincoln got the nomination. He was everybody's second choice.
And so then he ends up choosing some of these people to work with him incredibly closely. And could you imagine this happening now?
I can't. You know, I think about our political structure now, and I see how chaotic it literally would be, as if the presidential nominee, once elected, picks all of his political enemies and puts them around his cabinet. But the reason why Lincoln did it was he recognized the value that each one of those men could bring. And each one had a very unique position. Bates ended up being his attorney general. And if you think about all the legal challenges that would have been levied against the president, the White House, the administration, in a time when the nation is coming apart, you have the states in the South seceding from the Union. He needed somebody that could figure out how to run a Treasury Department in a time when we didn't even have paper money in this country until after 1860, when Salmon Chase becomes the Secretary of the Treasury. And he institutes the first paper currency, and then also finding ways to raise money to fund this costly war effort. Those were things that Chase was very gifted in doing. Seward, on the other hand, a very well-traveled man. In fact, he was so assured that he would win the nomination that instead of campaigning for it, he traveled. Well, he traveled the world, and so he comes back. And Lincoln says, "You know, you need to be my Secretary of State because you understand what we're facing here." And what they were facing was, would Great Britain side with the South as opposed to the North? We can't imagine the turmoil that was going on. And yet these men become this amazing group of rivals, so to speak, that Lincoln valued for their own the gifts and things that they could bring to the table. He would put his own preferences and his own feelings aside to build a team that was going to be truly amazing.
And it is truly amazing. I mean, if you think about this happening now, everyone thinks it would be crazy. But clearly it was genius for Abraham Lincoln. And, you know, I think a team of rivals is maybe a dramatic way of putting it for the everyday leader. I'm hoping that maybe you can put this into perspective for the everyday leader, for our listeners. You know, how could someone build a team like this now?
The thought that comes to mind is, so let's say we're in an organization and there's four or five manager level people. There's going to be a transition of leadership in the organization, and one of them, they're all competing, so to speak, in their own minds. You know, they all would like that top job, so to speak, or that position, let's say, or even if it's, you know, a new plant manager, and all the supervisors are hoping that maybe they're the person that would be chosen. So the person gets the job. Well, then who are they going to use as their inner circle? Because I use that phrase in the email, the inner circle. This is your group of confidants that are going to help you think through your decisions. So we'll use the example of the a new president or a new VP of ops in a company. They need to take the people who probably are disappointed that they didn't get that position and give them opportunities to still allow their individual gifts and strengths to be utilized. They need to become part of that leader's inner circle. And if you study the way Lincoln dealt with it, he never held grudges. He never retaliated with the people. He valued them and let them know that he valued them. And I think that can be done in any organization. I believe every senior leader needs to build his or her inner circle. And the best way to do it is to get people in that inner circle who are not yes people, but are people that challenge you, people that give you their opinions. Because like I've said in the past, great leaders look for multiple right answers. And the more diverse your inner circle, the better that thought process or thinking process is going to be.
Right. So I think on paper, this, you know, may look kind of simple or seem simple, but there really are two sides to this. So there appears to be an ability side, but I also believe that there's probably a willingness side that needs to come into play. You know, you mentioned the importance of having the ability to appreciate a different view from yours while remaining true to your core values. But what about having the willingness to follow through and to actually do it and to work alongside people that, you know, were once your rival or your competitor or have different views from you? So I think that's where the difficulty really lies. Would you agree with that? You know, what do you think?
Absolutely. I think what happens here is the great leaders, and, you know, when I talk about great leaders, Lincoln is one of them. Yes, certainly he sat through, he was in the Oval Office during the darkest time in our nation's history. So clearly he was one of the great leaders. But what made him great was that he knew who he was and he knew who he wasn't. And he was willing to let other people supply ideas. So just knowing how to do it, like you said, and willing are two different things. Not enough leaders today are willing to put their own egos aside to really let the organization flourish. You know, good leaders have followers. Great leaders develop leaders. And in next week's email, I'll even share, you know, the next position that Salmon Chase had after he was Secretary of the Treasury, because it was even a greater, more prominent position that President Lincoln gave him before his assassination.
So you briefly mentioned the ego, but do you think there are any other reasons why a leader wouldn't be willing to do this?
So ego's clearly the first. Fear of being challenged. You know, fear of not having all the answers. That was something I struggled with in the past, where I thought as the leader, I had to have the answers, when in fact, maybe what I needed to have were the questions, and that the people that were working with me, who could have become my inner circle, if I would have understood the impact of it, could have given me the answers. I think this will end up becoming a podcast at some point, you know, but one of my greatest failures was shutting down an emerging leader to the point that I had to fire her. And I didn't even realize I had shut her down until she was gone. So I guess the ego is the first part. And then the willingness to admit that you don't have all the answers, to overcome that fear factor, that you're not the person they might think you are.
So how does a person or a leader get to the point where they can admit that they have a fear or that their ego is getting in the way of, you know, doing what they know that they should be doing?
The key to that one, Marissa, is that if the leader can get past themselves and really focus on the organization they are leading and have a great self-awareness of where they are, that's what's necessary. And when they can get to that point of knowing who they are, like Lincoln did, he knew who he was, he knew who he wasn't. And that's why he realized he needed these people around him. And it ended up being an incredible strategic decision as well, as they built alliances and coalitions throughout the country in a time when it was really needed, the same thing happens in organizations. So to answer your question there, it's just having first getting past yourself and valuing the organization and your people more than yourself and your reputation, and developing that great sense of awareness as to, you know, what do I need to work on?
And both those things, they're not situational. They're not something, you know, you put into practice once, you know, get over the hurdle and forget about. They're not always easy to overcome. I mean, those are things that are life skills and could really impact your whole life, not just that situation in itself.
For sure. Because if, you know, we may think we act a certain way at work and a different way at home, but there's a lot of similarities. So if you're a person that can't become really self-aware at work, you're not self-aware at home either.
Coming back to books, which is where we started, is there a book or any specific books or resources that you could recommend to someone who may be looking to do that?
Wow. You caught me off guard with that one, but that's okay. It's a book that I read. It's a real quick read, and somebody else asked me, what's the best book to read to start with? And it's, I don't remember, it's the 21 Something Qualities of a Leader by John Maxwell. I don't know, it's either maybe the 21 Invaluable Qualities of a Leader by Maxwell. It really will, if you read it and you think about it, it will really get to the heart of where you are as a leader.
We'll add that book. We'll get the right title and we'll add it to the show notes for anyone who's looking for that.
Yep.
And I think to wrap up our discussion here about Abraham Lincoln, I thought it'd be a fun opportunity to share a little Lincoln trivia for
Please
our listeners.
Do.
That's something that my book club has started doing. We've started going to trivia. So I'm always looking for fun facts that might help me out in the future. So I Googled a lot and found a lot of interesting facts that would make you say, wow, or how cool. But this one I just thought was kind of funny. And it truly shows that Lincoln really cared about who he had around him all the time. So Abraham Lincoln's cat ate dinner at the White House dinner table with him.
Whoa, that wouldn't happen at my house.
Yeah, mine either. So save that nugget of information for the next time you're at trivia.
Sounds good. And, you know, do you have more or should we save them for next week?
I think we should save them.
Okay, because we'll be talking about Lincoln some more next week. So we're done with episode 3. We really appreciate you joining us. Want to make sure that you subscribe to our podcast. Please rate our podcast. That's the only way that it's going to start getting working its way to the top of the list. Again, it's available through the Apple Podcast app. It's available on Google Play. As Marissa said, please send in questions. Tell us what you like. Tell us what you don't like. If there's something that you would like us to talk about that we aren't, let us know. Our goal is to meet your needs and bring things that can add value to your life. So with that, I'm Dave Freund.
And I'm Marissa Norcross.
And this was The Next Page.